Because there are just a lot of really messed up family dynamics that unfortunately we can relate to in Genesis. And I know that many of us, as we get ready for the holidays and all of that, we go not to great situations all the time, right? Or we're going to show up and there's going to be conflict or the same fights over and over, or you're like, you know what, I'm just not going this year. So we're going to talk this month of November. We're really focusing on family. Last week we did the first family, Cain and Abel, and Adam and Eve, and they were so functional that Cain murdered Abel. And now we're going to talk about Abraham, Sarah, Hagar, Ishmael, and Isaac. So another really great A-plus job of a functional family. So let's talk about Abraham first. So as we get started, Winston, did you click something? My clicker's not working.
I did click something.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you. So Abraham, let's kind of review. In Genesis 12, Abraham is called out of Ur, and he is called to be a blessing to the nations. He has promised many descendants, and he has promised to become a great nation. He's about 75 years old when this call comes, and he has no children.
Oh, he's ancient.
Yeah, this is really important because he has no children. And God's like, you're going to have as many descendants as there are stars in the sky. And Abraham's like, I am childless. But Abraham believes him, right? And it's credited to him as righteousness. But the problem with this story and with Abraham is it takes a really long time, right? It's going to take 25 years for God to give him any sort of descendants. And that's a long time to wait for anything, especially as you're getting older and you're like, I'm going to die soon. So, like, where is this promised child? And so they're waiting, and his wife is waiting, and, you know, especially being a woman of that time, like, that was what you did. You had children. Abraham, like, his family, his legacy was supposed to come from his children. In fact, at one point, he's like, you know, my servant's going to get my household. And God's like, no, he's not. I'm going to bless you. But the problem happens is that they get impatient. And I know that I frequently get impatient with things. And I can't even imagine having to wait 25 years for a promised child. Right? Like, I think of the birth giving years, and I don't think of them as 25 years. At least not in modern society, right? Like, that's a long time to wait for a promise. And so, Abraham and Sarah, they're like, well, maybe we're not really doing this right. And they start trying, they're like, let's come up with our own solution, right? Maybe we're supposed to do what everybody else is doing. And it leads to trouble. So that's kind of where we're jumping into this story. It's been about 12 years since God has promised Abraham that he'll have many descendants, right? So he's in his 80s now. Sarah's right along with him. And they're set up and they're still childless, right? And God's like, you're going to be a great nation. And so they kind of give up of waiting, and they're like, let's figure it out. And you see this in movies and things all the time. Usually it's not the 80-year-olds who give up waiting. It's like the teenagers, I feel like. It's the young ones who are always like, I can't wait anymore. If you've watched the newer Star Wars movies, you have Poe Dameron goes up to the Admiral. We're all going to die, right? What is your plan? And because she's an admiral and he's like a captain, she doesn't tell him her plan. Like, she's like, I need you just to trust me. And he doesn't, so he sends off people in secret, and now then it ends up causing lots of chaos and lots of disaster. But the point being is, that happens a lot in movies, you know? The young teenager gets tired of waiting on the old mentor, and they're like, I'm just going to do the thing. And then it all crumbles down around them. So has there ever been a time in your life that you got tired of waiting and gave up on God and like, I'm just going to solve this myself?
Yes.
Can you give me an example?
I can't give an example because it's happened.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Sorry.
That was the hard thing about this. I was like, man, this is so, like, I feel like this happens all the time. I had to text with someone and I was like, I know this is a thing, but like, why can't I think of a specific example? Because all I can think of is this like repeated thing happening all the time.
I love pineapple. Sorry, that
But does anyone want to share a time that you got tired of waiting and gave up on God? Yeah.
Is giving up on hope the same as giving up on God?
I think temporarily, yes, I would say. Like, God is our hope. So, yes, I would say that.
Well, then, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we can all think of times where we're like, yeah, I'm tired of waiting. Like, you're not doing anything. Yeah.
But I have to say, because I have time that I can look back on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was younger and I was impatient, like everything. No, it's even a 2-year-old, they're not very patient either. So it's not all through our life. I look back and say, oh, that was like no time at all. And I see something fulfilled, or I see a promise, or I see his help in my life.
Mm-hmm.
In the retrospect, you know, in hindsight.
And, yeah.
And it doesn't, I used to tell my son, you know, you stub your toe, you know it hurts. But after it goes away, you can't recall the pain. You can't bring the pain back. But you know it hurt, right? And it's kind of like with God. I mean, it's like he heals it, and you knew that it was something, but it doesn't feel bad anymore, you know?
Mm.
And you're not going to relive that pain.
That's true. Oh, I see a hand up.
Vlad,
what you got?
All right. I'm not proud of it. But before, like, I transitioned into, like, working, I lived a different lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Lived a different life. And I don't want to get into details, but financially I was doing amazing in this old previous lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided to change my life and become a law-abiding citizen, financially it was very rough and tough. And mm-hmm. It was a very hard time. So, not that I did, but I was so close to, like, just saying, all right, I gotta go back to that lifestyle because this isn't it, and I got mouths to feed, and this is, you know. But I guess I had, like, a moment with God, basically, I was, like, speaking and praying, and I just felt like God was telling me, this is what a normal life is, this is what it is, this is how people live, and these are the sacrifices that people make.
Yeah.
You have to go through it as well. So I didn't go back to that lifestyle, but I was so close, and many times and I just, every time I feel like that, I just remember that prayer and conversation I had.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Winston, go ahead.
So Kelly says, to be honest, I can be quite impatient sometimes, especially when things don't go according to my logic, or I feel like I can do it myself. I think when I was job searching, I took whatever came first, which was a marketing job that ended up being me going to Sam's Club and Costco's to sell products. Or I was scorned and stubborn, wanted to be independent, and left home to come to Baltimore to live versus going to Salisbury.
Mm. All right, yeah. Yeah, so we have these times where we get off track, right? And I love that, like, I'm just going to do this myself, right? God, I waited on you for enough, right? So I'm just going to do this myself. And that's what we have with this story, right? And so we're going to look at Genesis 16. Winston, will you read for us?
Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go, sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her."
So I'm going to stop right there. So we look back at this tonight, and I've seen so many sermons where someone makes a joke about this, like, oh, if your wife tells you to do this, like, don't do it, right? Like, but the thing is, we, like, you know, like, oh, you know, you look at this, and it's like, oh, that's a bad idea. But the reality is this was common practice back then. This would have been the norm, okay? It was just accepted, oh, your wife is barren, then you sleep with your slave, and you have children that way. This was not, like, some off-the-wall thing. Is this kind of almost like, I see it on TV shows a lot, which I think it's just mind-boggling, but the whole idea of, like, you can have, like, 5 celebrities that you can sleep with guilt-free or whatever. Like, you see that in TV shows or whatnot. That's kind of, like, almost the equivalent, not exactly, but, like, it's just accepted, right? This is an accepted practice. It's not a Sarah woke up one day and was like, oh, I got a crazy idea. This was just how it worked back then. Go ahead, Jenna.
I'm going to keep this short, but I have a friend who grew up in this religious organization / cult that did practice plural marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it kind of reminds me of.
Yes.
It was a very hard lifestyle on her mom and her dad's other 2 wives, including her dad, who was pressured to live this lifestyle.
Yeah. So, and there are times, like, this isn't Because, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, I've seen this joke too many times and it annoys me. Because it's not like Sarah woke up and had a, I have a great idea. This was just, like, what people expected to happen if you were barren, right? That was a kind of a fact. I'm not saying, and either is scripture saying, that this was a good idea or a good thing. I'm saying that the culture around them all did this. Okay? Kind of like today's culture, it is very normal for people to discuss, you know, your five celebrity exceptions or whatever in a relationship. Not what you're supposed to do, but what the culture around you is doing. All right, Jenna, will you keep reading for us? Right here, Abram agreed
to what Sarai said. Why isn't it
so? They haven't, their names haven't changed
okay.
yet.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. So they do live for a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He slept with Hagar and she conceived.
Yeah, that's a really important part, right? So she gave him to be his wife. Like, you know, it's not just like she's still a slave. She was here, you are, because... And during that time period, right, you were either a prostitute or a wife. You didn't really, if you were sleeping with someone, you didn't get a choice. You were the wife now. And like, so like, and that's, I was, so that's like an important part, right? Like it's, she's now a plural, like a wife, not just a slave. Yes, Jenna.
And this reminds me so much of where my friend Olivia came from, because her mom was the first wife. The second wife is her mom's younger sister. So they give their younger female relatives, the sister, and then their first cousin, married her dad, so they basically, it's almost a grooming tactic.
Yeah.
And now my friend she has a lot of siblings, but now they all live that lifestyle too.
Yeah. So like now we recognize that as abnormal and wrong.
Abnormal, but now
that this time period this was fairly normal. Okay. So then we have Hagar gets pregnant. Tracy, will you continue for us?
When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your slave is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think is best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her.
So Hagar decides, like, I'm the one who's pregnant, so now I'm better than you. And Hagar was probably Egyptian. We don't know for a fact, but that is generally what tradition and our best guess is. Because when she flees into the wilderness...
It says Egyptian slave.
Oh, it does. Sorry. Sorry. I'm what? She was Egyptian. Sorry. Hagar was Egyptian. And so, like, she's kind of like, I win now, right? Like, you're barren. You were my mistress, but society says... People say that I'm worth more now because I'm pregnant. And Sarah gets all upset about this. And she's, you know, and then I love this. Very similar to Adam and Eve. You'll notice that families kind of replicate each other. You know, like you see the same patterns in your families that were your grandfather did. And you have the same pattern here because Adam and Eve went and blamed each other. And then Sarah's like, this is your fault. Right? Like... Sarai was the one with the idea. She was also the one who was like, you know, we got to do something because I'm childless and we're supposed to have a whole kingdom. But then she's like, this is your fault, right? And Abram's just like, I ain't getting in this. Like, he just throws up his hands. I'm not involved. And, you know, I'm sure you know people like that. Like, when you're trying to be like, I have an issue. And they're like, look, I'm not taking a side. I am not getting involved. And then, so Abram's like, you just do whatever you think is best, right? You just do whatever you think is best. And so Sarah mistreats her. We don't know how she mistreats her, but I'm assuming it was really bad. And so Hagar runs away. And she looks, she starts fleeing back towards home to Egypt. Yes.
I could go in the verse 5 all day.
Yes.
Because that really shows the reality of this, of plural marriage, where the wives are jealous of each other. They're always competing for a husband's attention, seeing
mm-hmm.
who can have the most children.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. And it's not something we see very common today, but it is something that was very real back then,
yeah.
Right? And it was very much, whoever had the children was the favored one.
Or the skinny, pretty wife.
Well, that wasn't a thing.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so when we do things the world's way, people get hurt. That's the main fault, right? They were like, okay, God is taking too long. He promised us this, but he hasn't really come through. So we're going to do it how everybody else is, right? My, you know, the cousin so-and-so or our neighbors, whoever you have, this would have been a general, like, this is, okay, you don't have children, this is how you get children, right? And that's, so they did it the world's way, and then we have Hagar gets really hurt, right? She ends up fleeing into the desert, and we're going to continue the story in just a minute. But this we see all the time, and it may not be, it may not be even a relationship. Like Vlad's example about money, right? We do illegal things to get the money that we want, and people get hurt, right? I'm not going to tell your story, Vlad, but I know you can agree with me that people got hurt, right? And like when we go after things, like where we step on people so we can improve in our career, people get hurt. And the world tells us, right, get all the money you can, take it all, yeah, right, and step on other people. Yeah, sorry, Vlad, did you want to say anything?
No, and that especially, you know, this was long ago, but in that lifestyle, there's no room for emotions or feelings. Like, and you know the damage that's being done, but it's like, like sink or swim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, like, and the world tells us we should go after all of the money and step on anybody who gets in our way, right? Like, anybody else should just be put down. The world tells us we should pursue hedonism, the pursuit of, like, just whatever makes us happy at all costs, right? As long as it doesn't, you know, quote unquote, hurt someone else. And when we do that, people always end up hurt. It's just a fact of life. When you try to do it the world's way, people get hurt. All right, so we're going to continue reading. Lee, will you read this portion?
Sure. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah, she answered. Okay. Go back to your mister. The angel of the Lord told her, can you move a little bit? Thank you. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count.
So then God intervenes, right? And Hagar is not out there crying right now, right? She hasn't cried out to God. God sees her and sees what has happened, right? And God's not happy about what happened. So what we have to remember about the Old Testament is a lot of the Old Testament is just records what happens. It is not approval. The Old Testament is a this happened and then this happened and then this happened. It does not mean you should do this. Okay, like, it doesn't always give us judgment. But here, right, the angel of the Lord went after Hagar and was saying, like, where are you going, right, and came to her. And it's such a beautiful thing because, again, she was a slave, right? She wasn't in that, in her life, she wasn't, like, quote unquote, worth anything to the people around her. And she was like, I'm going back home. I'm running away. I'm done with this. And the angel of the Lord comes out and says, where are you? And where have you come from? Where are you going? And she's honest with him. And it's that moment, because sometimes God just steps in our way and says, where are you going? Where are you going? And he tells her to go back. And I mean, she does, right? And that's one of those crazy things. Because if I was running away from someone who was treating me so badly, and then, you know, like an angel just showed up and was like, go back, I still might hesitate. I'd be like, who are you to tell me? Because she didn't have the Bible. Like, we're in Genesis 16, right? Like, there has not been a lot of stories so far, right? That they don't have these, like, because if you notice in the future Old Testament, they say the God of Abraham, the God of Jacob, the God of Isaac, right? There's no, like, who is this guy, right? This is, like, the first interactions with God people are having.
It's like you're in Dracula. When you're in Dracula, you don't know that you're in Dracula.
Yeah.
I'm in the book of Genesis, but I don't know that yet.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
Yeah, but anyway, so she's like, I'm running away, and the angel says, go back and submit to her. And here's the beautiful promise: I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. And this is important because Hagar is going to give birth to Ishmael, and Ishmael is not the child of promise, right? There is not God promises Abraham that the child of promise is going to bless the nations. He's going to be, kings are going to come from his line. Your descendants will be too numerous to count, right? And he's going to be the father of many nations. Ishmael doesn't get all of that. But he does look at Hagar and he says, you are hurting and you were mistreated, right? So I'm going to increase your descendants. Because during this time period, that was the only thing, like, physically that mattered. So it was saying, I'm not abandoning you. You're not who was, you know, like, this was not supposed to happen, but I'm not giving up on you. I'm not saying, like, you know, you're going to be cast out. And I think it's really important to note that God doesn't abandon those we sin against or if we've been sinned against.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, can I just finish? No, I see.
Yeah.
So God doesn't abandon those we sin against, which I find comforting, because sometimes, like, when you make a mistake and you're like, if you're anything like me, you think about it for forever and you're like, oh my God, that person's never going to be saved because I really messed that up, right? Or like, and he doesn't, but he doesn't abandon those, and he doesn't abandon us who've been sinned against. Like, sometimes we're Abraham and Sarai and we've done something really dumb, right? We've hurt people, right? And they are fleeing from us with just cause. And God says, I'm still going after them. And sometimes we're Hagar and we've been hurt real bad. And it's by our own families, by these people. And we're like, God, like, why? But God doesn't abandon us either.
Well, hey, okay, again, we're in Genesis. When do they become the chosen people? Is that after Abraham?
Abraham is the call. So it all starts with Abraham in Genesis 12.
Okay,
so Genesis 1 through 11, everyone pretty much agrees. I should say 90% of Christian scholars agree that Genesis 1 through 11 is different than the rest of the Bible. It's a special kind of, it's the creation of the world. It's not necessarily fact and history, more of like its stories and its origins. And then Genesis 12 starts histories with Abraham being called immediately. Genesis 11 is the story of the Tower of Babel, all of the nations being spread out. And then you go straight to Abraham and you follow his line through the rest of Genesis.
So the fact that she was Egyptian, you know, because I was thinking, whenever I thought about the story, I always thought, well, she wasn't one of the chosen because she was a Gentile. But at this point in time, they didn't have that.
Not really, no.
Because
Abraham's household there. So Abraham was rich. We know that much, right? He did not have children, but he had servants. And he had a large, like, caravan of people that he took care of or responsible for, right? And so Hagar was a part of that and would have been included in his family during that time period, right? So she honestly would have been included in the, like, the bounty. But she wasn't. But thing is God's like, I made a promise and I'm carrying this through Isaac, through Sarah, because this has to be a miracle. I need you to know that no one else could have done this but me, because this is going to start off your faith for the rest of your lives. Right? That's why this is so important, right? Because Hagar represents all of our self-made religion. Right? That's what Paul gets upset about in Galatians, right? He says, you know, you have the slave child and the free child. And the slave child, allegorically, what she represents is he represents is any time we try to earn heaven or any time we try to, like, check boxes, where God's like, I want a relationship with you, right? And I want you to just to trust me. And then we have these times where, like, I don't know if I can do that, God. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm going to try this, right? And disaster happens. Like, Hagar, like, I feel for Hagar. Right, in this story. And even Ishmael, right? Because he didn't ask for any of this.
He didn't ask to be born a butthead.
Yeah, and like, now we have these conflicts that goes back. Like, the Arabs and the Jews now have huge conflicts. Like, one of the big dividing things between the Islamic and Christian faith is that Islams believe that Ishmael was the chosen one. And like, so like, their sin right there has consequences that last generations. So there are still consequences when we sin. There's not like God doesn't just wipe it out and we're free. There are still consequences, but he doesn't abandon us. And he doesn't abandon those we sin against either. Anna, will you read?
The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You will name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility towards all his brothers. She gave this name to the Lord, who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy.
Mm-hmm.
It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave this name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael.
So we have this story, and where Ishmael means the Lord hears, right? And it's like, so the name is literally, the reason God tells her to name him Ishmael is that anytime you call him, you're going to remember that I heard your misery, that I was there for you, right? This was a very special, but Ishmael, right, is not just like, oh, you know, if that's a name you should do. It is a reminder, because like God knows her life is not getting easier, right? Like this isn't going to just be easy. So it is a reminder that every time you call your son's name, you know that I heard you. And so like that is just an amazing thing. And then actually I was talking to Kelly T about this on Friday because it came up and we were talking about some people think God cursed Ishmael. I don't read a curse here. I just kind of read like it's kind of a nature versus nurture. This is who Ishmael's going to be. Like that like to think about it, like Ishmael really does get, again, consequences for our sins. He's Sarai, Abraham's, you know, first wife, the matriarch, doesn't love him, doesn't want him around, right? And he does going to live in hostility toward his brothers. Like, he can't stand Isaac. Why would he? Isaac's the favorite child, the chosen one. And he's sitting there and it says that he mocked Isaac, which Isaac means laughter, and the word for mocking is kind of like a play on words there. But, like, he mocks Isaac, right? Of course he does. Like, I feel for him. I'm not saying he did the right thing, but I do feel for Ishmael here. Right? Because Sarah never gets it right. Sarah never gets like, I should, you know, Isaac can still be the promised child and I don't have to curse Ishmael. Right? But like we have that very real thing when you have broken families, right? When you have families where the child comes from illegitimate means, or you have stepchildren and blended families, there is conflict there. Not that anybody necessarily wants the conflict, but Ishmael is a constant reminder to Sarah of giving up on God and, you know, letting her husband sleep with her slave. Like, it's a and that's, anyway, Sarah never is able to love Ishmael. Yes, Jenna.
And this, like, I will say this again and again, but this just shows why God wants us to live monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yep.
You know, my friend that grew up, her aunt, the second wife, was very mean to the first wife, the third wife, and their children. And that's the memory that she has. And there was some sibling rivalry growing up because of that family dynamic.
Yeah. Kelly.
And by the laws that existed at the time, Ishmael was considered Sarah's son. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Like, he was... That's a really hard one because, like, at this time, we don't even have biblical law.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we have ancient Near East customs.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my understanding, but I'm not even going to say it was law because there wasn't really, like, laws at this time.
Okay.
Like,
but by custom, she should have been treating him as a son.
Yes, he would have been the firstborn child.
So
he would have been...
basically, he's Cinderella.
okay. I mean, if that helps you think about it, sure. But anyway, I'm going to go back to this. But God's, I love this because Hagar names God. People don't name God in scripture, right? And God hasn't revealed himself as Yahweh yet. He's just the God of Abraham. The reason people call him the God of Abraham is because God didn't have a name, right? And everybody had a God that they worshiped. So you had to have, like, some sort of, like, way to say, this is this God versus this God, right? And so that's why they say the God of Abraham. And so God reveals himself in Exodus as Yahweh, right? That's his personal name. But here, she doesn't have a name for him, and she doesn't even really necessarily see him as the God of Abraham because she didn't meet him through Abraham. So that's what she says, you are the God who sees me. And I love that because there are so many times in life when we've been hurt or we've been abused or left off to the side. And what we really need to know is that somebody sees me. There's this beautiful thing with The Chosen. If you haven't watched the series, totally recommend it. But they take Nathaniel, and in the New Testament, the story of Nathaniel has always been one that I never really understood, because all we really know is that Jesus tells him, "I saw you under the fig tree," and he was like, "Wow, that's amazing! I'm gonna follow you." And it's one of those stories, and it's like, and even Jesus is like, "You're gonna follow me because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You're gonna see way more amazing things, right?" We don't have a lot of context, but I will say, in The Chosen, they took some creative license and some artistic license, and it's actually a moment of a crisis of faith for Nathaniel. Like, he lost his, this is all creative license, but it does help kind of put this together. He lost his, he was an architect, something fell, somebody died, he's like beyond all hope, right, and he's under the fig tree, thinking about killing himself, and then God speaks to him there, and it's not Jesus, and then Jesus later says, "I saw you under the fig tree." But the point being, and what I think illustrates so well right there, is you're the God who sees me, because sometimes we feel so abandoned by the world, and we're like, doesn't anyone care? Like, this hurts so much, and like, nobody cares, or no one sees what I was trying to do or who I was. And this is this magic moment for Hagar where she's like, "I understand. You see me, and that's enough, right? I don't need to worship anybody else, right? Like, you are the God who sees me." And that's what God is for us too, because like, if there are times, and you know, maybe we haven't been in Hagar's exact situation, but I know that there have probably been times for everybody in this room where your family did not treat you how you deserved. Where you deserved better. And God says, "You know what? I see you. And I was there even when they were a jerk, abusive, conniving, lying, mistreating you. And I love you. And I just want you to come to me." And so there's this magic. And I love this for Hagar, right? Because yes, Ishmael's going to, like, the descendants of Ishmael are going to cause problems. And there's lots of things. But Hagar, right? There's no reason for me not to believe we'll see Hagar in heaven. So, kind of in a nutshell, Ishmael is not the child of promise, right? He is the allegorical representation of trying to do things in the world's way, the human's way, right? The human way. God doesn't change his plan because they, like, sinned. He's not going to be like, "Oh, well, all right, I guess we'll just use Ishmael." He's not, "No, I made a promise and I'm going to keep it." He still promised to be a great nation, and he's protected. God said, "I'm not going to screw you over because they treated you badly. That's not your fault. Right? You're not going to own that sin. I'm not going to throw that sin on you." Yeah, I'll wait. And anyway, I just think that's so, so important. And then Hagar, right? She names God. She's protected. She becomes the mother of a great nation. Something that never would have happened to a slave, right? God does that. That's an honor. And she knows God, right? Like, God isn't speaking to everybody at this time, as far as we know, right? He spoke to Abraham, he spoke to Sarai, and he spoke to Hagar, right? There's three people that he's spoken to so far in this. So it's a big deal. We good? Oops. So, God, this is to say that God redeems our mistakes. Whatever missed, Sarah and Hagar messed it up. And I mean, sorry, Sarah and Abram messed it up, right? But God still steps in and protects Hagar and Ishmael. But there are still consequences. And God loves us so much, even when people have treated us poorly. And he does see you. He is the God who sees you. And he cares about you. And that's really what I hope you take away from this, because I know as we get ready, some families are more peaceful than others, more functional than others. I understand that. But as we get ready for the holidays, remember that you have a new family in Christ, that this is your family. that, like, that is there. It is the spirit of adoption, right? That we are all part of Abraham's family, not by blood, but by God. And so our family is so much bigger now and so much better because we are all called to die to ourselves and live like we believe that God is true.